As conversations continue about reintroducing an expanded human rights ordinance to include protections for LGBT citizens, what role will faith play in the conversation? What role should faith play in the conversation? Good morning. This is Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. I'm Kyle Reese, senior pastor of Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church and board member of One Jacks.
And I'm Nancy Bronner, executive director of One Jacks, an institute of the University of North Florida. Faith Matters is WJCT's quarterly program, taking a closer look at today's issues through the lens of faith. In 2012, an expanded human rights ordinance went before the Jacksonville City Council. A significant portion of the faith community opposed that ordinance, and a significant portion of the faith community supported it. Today, we're bringing together voices from a variety of faiths and perspectives to talk about the role that faith should play in the discussion about an expanded human rights ordinance.
I want to note that while both One Jacks and I personally supported the 2012 effort, today's program is focused on the role that faith should or should not play in the analysis of an expanded HRO, and we're interested in examining all viewpoints around this issue in our discussion. Here to begin our conversation are Cindy LaQuadera, trial attorney and partner at Ackerman LLP and former general counsel for the City of Jacksonville. Cindy, good morning.
Good morning.
And David Bauerlein, journalist with the Florida Times Union. David, good morning.
Good morning.
You can join our conversation this morning by calling 549-2937. We want to hear your views.
And later in today's program, we'll hear different perspectives on this issue from Jacksonville religious studies scholars and faith leaders. First, let's talk with David Bauerlein. David, as the Times Union reporter who covered the introduction and subsequent failure of the expanded HRO in 2012, what comes to mind as you think about that effort?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is just really how dramatic the vote was. And the entire city council chambers were filled. Every seat was filled. There was a real breathless aspect. Nobody really could predict what was going to happen. It was a close vote. There was a 17-2 vote against expanding the ordinance to have sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. So that failed by a large margin. But then when it was just sexual orientation, it was just a 10-9 vote against it. So it was a razor-thin vote that could have gone either way, really. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of passion involved leading up to it. There was hours and hours of public comment. This was an issue that really touched a chord with people, not only in the city council chambers, but anytime we wrote stories about it, tremendous amount of reader comments about it.
And what did you remember about the role faith played in that discussion in 2012?
Well, there was definitely organized opposition by religious-based groups. I think that in retrospect, the supporters of it probably did not have as much of a organized effort to show that there was support from religious-based groups, religious-based viewpoints in that could support the kind of changes mm-hmm. that they were pushing for. But there was no doubt that you had large influential groups. Certainly First Baptist Church was a big player in opposition to it. And so there was definitely that factor. And then there's also the, there's always been and always will be the issue of to what extent should an ordinance or a law compel somebody to do something that they feel conscientiously, for whatever reason, they don't want to do. Mm-hmm. So that was a big background as well in it. Although you think about it, I mean, obviously it was not a determining factor because it was a close vote, 10-9, on just the sexual orientation, which if you just want to have a moral argument against it, you can make the same moral argument against that as you would against the more all-inclusive mm-hmm. ordinance that failed even by a wider margin. Mm-hmm.
Cindy, you were general counsel during the 2012 HRO effort. What were the major issues, in your opinion, that caused the HRO to fail?
I think there was a great deal of confusion about it. The message has to be clear when it's something that's important to people, and this was very important. The ordinance actually would have a very limited effect, and the reason I think it was supported by so many businesses was because people do not generally hire people based on their sexual preference. People are hired generally to get the best and the smartest. And here, I think the message came out that we were trying to tell religious people what's good and what's bad. And that's never the role of government, and certainly wasn't the role of the ordinance. And I think perhaps if we could explain just what the JEOC does in better detail, people would understand they're there to facilitate and help and prevent litigation, prevent problems, not create them.
David talked about the passion of opinions around the 2012 effort. Cindy, as you look back and think about the role of the faith community, did the faith community help shed light on the issue and try to expand the conversation, or did, in your opinion, the faith community bring more heat upon politicians to try to get this effort voted down?
I think the faith community, as you pointed out earlier, is just a broad community with all types of different decisions. So, and I think each council member has to vote the way they think it's best for the city. So I don't think there's anything wrong with what the faith community did previously. They're entitled under the First Amendment to lay out all of their concerns. But I think, again, the issue got ahead of what the ordinance was. No one can in the government, this is very important, nobody can in the government tell somebody in a faith community what to do. And so this is not something where you have to practice your religion differently because of this. At least that was the message that did not come out. So I think they were helpful. It's always helpful to have the religious community come out and express their concerns. The issue was, were they addressed in a manner that was appropriate so they could move on, and that just didn't happen.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT, and we're talking this morning about a new expanded human rights ordinance on the horizon and the role that faith played in the 2012 effort. Give us a call and join the conversation at 549-2937. Let's go to the phones.
And we have a caller, Pastor Philip Baber from the Unitarian Church of Jacksonville. Go ahead, Philip. Good morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. So I'm Philip Baber, and I am the pastor of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Jacksonville. And earlier this week, I was honored to have the opportunity to represent my congregation at a town hall meeting that was hosted by City Councilmember Joyce Morgan. And in that public forum, I was able to convey to Ms. Morgan just how passionately my congregation desires to see the passage of a fully inclusive HRO that will grant basic legal protections to members of our LGBTQ community. And I just want to say that for me and my congregants, there is absolutely no question that this is an issue of faith. And moreover, I think it's really incumbent upon all faith leaders who hold these same values to enter the public square carrying the name of our faith with us and declaring unequivocally that it is our faith that compels us to take that action. I think that for too long, only one small faction has taken the name of their religion into the public square, which has led to a distorted perception that the faith community has monolithic views when it comes to important social issues like this one. But we all know that in actuality, there is a diversity of views on social issues among people of faith, and that is a diversity that reflects the diversity of views held by all Americans. But the only way that we can really correct that distortion is to proudly take our faith with us into the public square as we seek justice and equality for every child of creation.
Well, and Philip, thank you so much for your call. And that's right. The faith community speaks to this issue. But David Bauerlein, I think it's fair to say that the faith commitments of the city council members themselves probably played a role in the 2012 effort. What's your recollection of that?
You know, I don't recall a city council member ever rising to make a speech or saying, I'm against this because I'm personally opposed to homosexuality, or I'm personally opposed on moral grounds to this or that. Having said that, you know, you had council members, some council members who came from churches that were opposed to it, such as First Baptist Church. Obviously, they're hearing messages as well from the pulpit. It's part of their belief system in terms of how that works. So there were, I think that would play an effect undeniably. It was not something that was actually debated out there, or you didn't hear theological arguments made back and forth. That was kind of a subtext to the whole mm-hmm. debate about the ordinance.
Mm-hmm. More behind the scenes, you think?
Well, I think it was more behind the scenes, absolutely. Uh-huh. But obviously, it would have had an effect without a doubt. I mean, people do bring those belief systems with them when they come into public service.
Sure.
Cindy, I'm interested in the role of you talked about the misunderstanding, perhaps misinformation. As we think about the future HRO conversation, are the battle lines drawn so clearly now, or do you see a way forward for people of faith to sit down at the table and talk about how expanded human rights are good for the entire community?
I definitely see a role where people who disagreed previously will sit down and discuss this, and members, and certainly within the faith community. I've had that experience myself through many administrations with people's different beliefs, that sitting down one-on-one and explaining issues and explaining how people have the right to take their position, to make their position very public, but what is the connection particularly with an ordinance, an ordinance that says, we in Jacksonville are just going to treat anybody who walks in the door the same. And you can hire and fire if you have more than 15, typically. That's how the present ordinance is aligned with the federal. You can hire and fire at will, fewer than 15 people. But that if it's more than 15 people, the selection shouldn't be based on those criteria. And as I said, rarely is. Churches are different. All of their questions, and whether it's a church or a mosque or any other form of worship, their questions should be answered clearly. How does this affect me?
I was going to say, I think what Cindy says is absolutely right. I think in covering the debate, that's one of the big questions you always have is, there's probably an agreement that lines are drawn somewhere. I think there's the ordinance makes clear that if a church does not want to perform same-sex marriages, it does not have to. Certainly makes clear that if they want to hire a gay or lesbian minister, there's nothing that says they have to or are not allowed to do that. So that part is clear, where it really becomes hard to understand sometimes how the line is drawn when it comes to matters of faith is, if you have someone as a matter of faith who owns a restaurant, they've got a banquet hall, someone comes in and says they want to have a same-sex wedding reception there, okay, what's the law say? Can they refuse that on religious grounds, or they're a public accommodation? Do they have to say, look, you are treated equally under the law? That's where the real rub comes in this whole debate.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking this morning with Cindy Lacquadera and David Bauerlein. You can join our conversation at 549-2937 as we talk about the role faith should play or should not play in the discussions about an expanded HRO. And we're going to go to a caller, Susan in Mandarin. Welcome to the show. Go ahead with your question or comment.
I wanted to ask if perhaps you'd talk about the difference in faith. You use the term the faith community as if they're one big lump of people. Jonathan Haidt talks about the different ways people base their values. So some people base it on purity and authority, and other people base it on prevention of harm and fairness. And I think the religious community is divided that way also. And I would think those in the religious community who base their values on the prevention of harm and fairness would be more in favor of civil rights protections for all people. And those people of faith that are more authoritarian and more maybe wanting to go back to the 50s might have a different viewpoint. And I wonder if you would talk about is it correct to lump all the faith community into one slot? I hope my question makes sense.
Thank you, Susan. It does, and that's exactly the point of our program. The faith community is not lumped into one giant grouping. It is a complex intersection of faith and morality, and how has that played out in the public square. So, hence the reason for our program today, because we know the complexity of this issue for some people in the faith community. David.
Yeah, when Mayor Curry had the town hall meetings, one of the most fascinating ones was the full segment about religious leaders talking about that whole issue. And I think there's no way that this issue is going to be settled theologically. There's no theological answer to whether Jacksonville should or shouldn't have an ordinance. But it's absolutely true that there's a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different approaches people take. And sometimes people will start with from the same point and reach a different conclusion as they read the Bible or whatever religious tradition they come from. It's really fascinating the way that unfolds, and I think you'll certainly shows like this reflect that.
Mm-hmm. And we have another caller. We're going to speak with Alexandra in Arlington. Go ahead, Alexandra. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Sorry, I apologize. I'm a little sick, but I think this topic is really important. I'm a very religious person, but I also have liberal social views, and I believe that when you're offering a service or you have a business, that's something that shouldn't be that there should be no discrimination there in terms of religion, race, sex, anything like that. So if there's an owner of a shop and they're religious, they're offering a service because everyone can buy a service. Everyone can buy a phone, a cake. So that shouldn't be something that should be, there should be no discrimination. But religious views are something that you can't sell. That's something that you have to, independently want or, look forward to. So when a religious person, owns a business and they say that they don't want to serve someone just based on their religious views, I think that that's not right, and that should be something changed within our laws, because, my religious views shouldn't impact how I serve you and have how I do my service. You know what I mean?
Yes, thank you. Alexandra, thank you for your call. And Cindy, one of the things that's interesting to me is Jacksonville is not the only city where this conversation is going on. And opponents of the HRO bring up a couple of instances, perhaps in Houston or other places. But there are many cities where these protections have been extended and religious organizations seem to be doing just fine. Your thoughts?
And I think here in Jacksonville, because we are able to have this conversation with our religious community, and everybody does ultimately want the same thing. So I do think that we can have it. And that, again, what we have to recognize is Jacksonville's trying to say, we want our local agency to be part of this discussion when somebody thinks there's a problem based on one of their preferences. And it's likely coming anyway from the state and federal government. So who would you rather have lead that conversation if there's a problem? The local people you know and appointed by your local officials, or somebody at the state or federal level or the court system? And so I think it's not really... Let me see how to properly phrase this. I think it's coming anyway. I think people today are more open and understanding of changes among people. And I think it's important that local people participate in the participation of all of the faith and non-faith, people who don't believe. All of them interacting together will help bring us together. It is important. This ordinance is not telling people what to do, mm-hmm. and we need to get that message out. Right.
Thank you. And we're going to speak now with Richard in Murray Hill. Go ahead, Richard.
Hi. I wanted to concur first with an earlier caller who said that the religious or the faith community is not, a single entity. As far as I know, we've heard nothing from organized Jewish, Islamic, Buddhist groups. The opponents here seem to be conservative Christians, which Mayor Curry sees as a primary constituency. Also wanted to say that I don't really see this as a religious issue at all. The HRO guarantees non-discrimination, housing, and employment to certain groups of people who it's recognized may have been discriminated against in the past. Unless the religious community sees, allowing people their guaranteed rights as a threat to their religious liberty, I can't see where there's a place for the quote-unquote faith community to be involved. the civil authority guarantees the rights of its citizens. This is all that the HRO does, is guarantee the rights of certain citizens, you know, to not be discriminated against. It grants them special privileges. So I really don't see that it's a religious issue at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard, for your comment.
Well, I think the point's well taken, that it's not a monolithic faith community out there that speaks with one voice on this. And obviously the different denominations have been having this own debate themselves in terms of whether to have gay and lesbian pastors ordained, in terms of whether to have same-sex weddings performed. They're part of the same thing Cindy's been talking about, which is there's this national conversation going on. It's happening, and they're engaged in it as already. So I personally, though, I think there is a role for the faith, for people to speak, and if they feel like that's something that they want to be part of the debate, they should. I mean, I think it does get to this issue of how do you draw the line? Where do you draw the line? As I understand the human rights ordinance, if a church-based group denies employment to somebody based on their race, that can be something that the person can take to the Human Rights Commission and say, you know, I was racially discriminated against, but this ordinance, as it's been proposed before and probably will be again, would say that in terms of sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, those are things that within the context of the religious organization, this ordinance would not affect. So that is an influence of religious-based views on how this ordinance has been shaped. It's when you get outside the sphere of the religious-based group, that's where it gets kind of harder sometimes to sort of understand exactly what the implications are. And that's where some of the debate comes into individual conscience and should somebody who owns a business do something that they believe, for whatever reason, is against their conscience.
Cindy, as you think about 2012, was there, I'm sure there was research done and people were listening to other communities, and as they expanded their human rights ordinances, wherever that might be, did faith play a major part in that conversation as much as it seems to here in Jacksonville?
It's hard to judge the nature of the conversation, because what you're judging is whether if one pastor takes a microphone and is quite persuasive, is that the same as 30 people who are not as articulate from a community. I think there was a role, because religion is very important to people in this country, and listening to other people is how you allay their fears. And so, yes, that conversation did go on in the research that I've done in the past.
And let's go to Bill in Clay County. Good morning, Bill. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. How are you doing this morning?
We're doing
wonderful, Bill. Thank you.
I just want to add a point. You know, the irony of it is that the Bible tells us that there's so many sins that humans commit. And we were born in sin, and we suffer that because of the lie that was told by Satan. So we inherit that sin, so we're all imperfect individuals. In the Bible, you can't find one instance where Jesus revoked anybody. He allowed that. That decision is up to God. So as scriptural people, our responsibility is come to an accurate understanding of what God wants from us and find out what he wants from a spiritual sense. We know that governments are allowed to exist to prove that man can't live by governments. All right?
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much.
Bill, thank you for your call. And I think that's the conversation that we continue. What is the role of government in this issue? And Cindy, Nancy and I are part of a conversation that happened just last week where a person made a very passionate speech that said, this shouldn't be a city council issue. This is an issue for the courts, because this is about human rights.
The courts are a default position, and it happened during in many other civil rights areas where people would not step up and have this conversation because it's difficult. It's difficult to be on the opposite side and listen. But the courts aren't elected. The federal courts is where this comes out. They're appointed for life. Their job is not to listen to the community and to make a decision based on judgment of what this community wants. And so to me, always better to start at the local level where you know people and you can meet over a table and discuss things and come out with a resolution that the community buys into. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Faith Matters on 89.9 WJCT. And Cindy Lacordaire and David Bauerlein, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Nancy Bronner, Executive Director of UNF's One Jacks Institute.
And I'm Kyle Reese, Board Member of One Jacks and Senior Pastor at Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church.
After a short break, we're going to continue our conversation about the role of faith in the expanded HRO effort with several religious scholars and faith leaders in our community. For those callers on hold, please stay on the phones and we'll take your calls in the next segment. We'll be right back with more Faith Matters.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
President-elect Trump has tweeted that he will be taking himself out of his business operation. But is that enough to address potential conflicts of interest? On the next Fresh Air, we discuss Trump's domestic and international business holdings, the potential conflicts, and the law and ethics surrounding conflicts with Eric Lipton, an investigative reporter for The New York Times. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2. Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Independent music transcends genre, form, and age. At Indie Endeavor, we endeavor to shine a light in the little explored dark corners of your musical imagination. Everything from new to old, foreign to domestic, electronic to acoustic, we play it all. Indie Endeavor, Tuesdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
And welcome back to Faith Matters, WJCT's quarterly program, exploring today's issues through the lens of faith. I'm Nancy Bronner.
And I'm Kyle Reese. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the reintroduction of an expanded human rights ordinance and the role that faith should or should not play in that introduction.
We're going to continue our discussion about whether faith should play a role in the upcoming HRO effort to include protections for LGBT citizens. Joining us now in the studio are Rabbi Jonathan Lubliner, Senior Rabbi of the Jacksonville Jewish Center.
Good morning, Nancy
and
Kyle.
Good morning.
Reverend Susanna Raffield, ordained Baptist minister, founder of Global Women, and local small business owner.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Dr. Julie Ingersoll, a religious studies scholar and professor of philosophy and religious studies at UNF.
Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rabbi Lubliner, you've been vocal in your support of an expanded human rights ordinance. Talk about ways that your faith informs that view.
Well, the word religion itself comes from the Latin religio, which is related to the root for ligaments. You know, it's about being connected. Religion for me is not simply about what we do with our aloneness, but more importantly, with our togetherness. So I think on this issue, it's not an issue on sexuality or orientation. It's an issue on how we are able to relate to the other, whoever the other may be. Certainly it's in the Hebrew Bible where we read, love your neighbor as yourself. We read that every human being was created in the image of God. It's in the Hebrew Bible that we have the verse from Micah about he has told you, O man, what is good, right? It's to love justice and to do justice, to love goodness and to walk humbly with God. And that's all about how we relate to other people, not whether we agree with them, but how we treat them with dignity. And I think that that is a religious issue.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Rathfield, as we have this conversation, in your view, should faith inform our view of the HRO, or is this simply about the rule of law and human rights?
Oh, wow. First of all, I want to say thank you for your words, Rabbi Lubliner. That was beautiful. How can we talk about this without talking about the other and how our God feels about other, which I think is to encompass it and to speak from the margins. I think as a minister, I am called to speak from the margins, not just for them, but from them. So to answer your question, Kyle, yes and no. I mean, if you are asking me, should the church decide about the HRO, to pass it or not pass it, absolutely not. But my faith compels me to do justice, to love mercy, to walk humbly, so to encourage equality and justice.
Dr. Ingersoll, this conversation gets us into the messy intersection of personal faith and public morality. You've said that this is a religious issue, that is, that people who are religious choose their positions based on their religious concerns. Can you see a path forward without simply having winners and losers?
Well, I think that's complicated. One of the things that happens often in these conversations, as we get a group of us together in a room like this who share the same view on the human rights ordinance, and I count myself among those who support inclusion with that, but we often don't hear the voices of the religious people who hold a different view, who embrace a different kind of religion. And certainly the Hebrew Bible does tell us to love our neighbor, but it also has God commanding genocide. So these traditions are complicated, and people who have certain views about social issues and find religious language to explain those views come down in a variety of different places. I'm not sure just talking amongst ourselves about this will push it forward. When you ask, is there a way to move forward on it? I'm thinking we have to take seriously the voices of people who are concerned about these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking of the complexity of this issue, we did reach out to several people in the community whose mm-hmm. faith led them to speak against the human rights ordinance, but unfortunately they declined to be a part of our show today.
We have a number of people on hold, and let's go to the phones right now and speak with Jason on the south side. Jason, you're a small business owner. Go ahead with your question.
Just a quick comment. We own a catering company, and we cater weddings and we cater events. And one of the first catering events we did was actually for a church, and it was interesting to say that. And as a Christian, we were sort of appalled by the treatment that we received. And I won't go into details on that, but my wife and I joke now. We say, before we cater for a church, we need to know how many members are on the committee. So, we did cook for a same-sex wedding. And really, this is an issue of honor. You know, this is an issue of valuing people. And one of the things, whatever your views are on homosexuality, you can have those views and still honor people and still love people. And I think that what has really just been missed in this whole process is this stance on some moral high ground, as if you're going to change or influence people's lives or love people. And what we have done and what we have chosen to do is to love people wherever they're at, to accept them as they are. And there's some conversations you don't have with people because it's not really appropriate. You know, we have gay friends, we have bi friends, we have transgender friends. And I really think this is an issue about valuing people and honoring people. And that, to me, is the core value that I've seen missing from the sort of comments that I hear from even some of my Christian friends. So that's
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for those comments.
Jason. Susanna Raffield, as we think about Jason's comment and question, it seems to me that a role that the faith community can be playing as we have this community conversation is, how do we get people around the table with different views? And so it's not an abstract conversation about the other, but it's a conversation about the person that may be sitting right across the table from me.
Well, Kyle, that could happen at Wednesday night supper.
Very much so.
I mean, definitely. I think we have to, as a faith leader, which I guess is what you're asking me, as a faith leader mm-hmm. or a small business owner?
Either one.
Okay. Well, as a faith leader, I would hope that I would encourage those conversations in church, not necessarily from the pulpit, mm-hmm. but in more small group situations, because on any given Sunday morning, regardless of where we're sitting, or Saturday or Friday, there are differences of opinions around us.
And we have another caller, Susan in Springfield. Susan, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question.
I don't have a question so much as just want to express my appreciation for so much of what has been said already. I am pastor of The Well at Springfield, and this is something that our congregation cares deeply about. I personally, as a minister, see this issue as primarily a human rights issue. One of the consistent concerns I know that has come up before when HRO has been brought before City Council is the concern that we are trying to force a special class of people to have special rights. And this is really about equal rights. It's the recognition that we are all deeply connected, and I so appreciate that that has already been shared. But it is also a faith issue. You know, caring for the vulnerable is a central part of almost all of our faith traditions. And it's been so encouraging to me as a faith leader to see the faith narrative in Jacksonville shift, largely in part because so many faith leaders have come forward, and we have a growing list of people from diverse religious traditions who have stepped forward to say that they are supportive of an expanded human rights ordinance.
Thank you, Susan, so much. Dr. Ingersoll, we asked the question, should the HRO be a religious issue? And one of the narratives in the community is it should not. Those who are pro or those who are anti, that this is a human rights issue, and that faith should not be the primary conversation about this ordinance.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's functioning here is we tend to think of, so if I come and say I teach about religions, people will say, well, which ones? And by that, they mean Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, Islamic, Hindu, Buddhist, so forth. But what actually happens in the way that religion functions in society is we almost can see two distinct religions in America. Made up of all of those traditions. And so my colleagues here in the room have much more in common with each other as a Christian and a Jew than they might with their counterparts in much more traditional parts of their community. And so one of the things that happens, I think, is that we get confused and we think, oh, we've got all these different religious viewpoints represented, when what we have mostly is the viewpoint of a kind of post-Enlightenment kind of religion that sees religion as relatively private and personal and faith-oriented rather than something that dictates every aspect of life on a day-to-day basis. And that's where the conflict is between those two kinds of religion, I think.
Mm-hmm. And we're now going to speak with Chuck in the Beaches. Chuck, go ahead with your question or comment.
Thank you, guys. I want to begin by saying I'm in favor of the I think it's called the HRO legislation, and I say that from a common sense perspective. If you just leave religion and faith out of it, just common sense would tell you basically what everybody's been saying, that we all have equal rights and we should all have them. But some of the things make it a little bit more difficult. If you look at the Declaration of Independence, it talks about us getting our rights from God, not from government. And then when we go to the Constitution, I think the Constitution says we separate our religion from things like the HRO, which that is, again, we're back to common sense. Now, so then I ask myself, what can I do about this? I am a Republican. I'm a Southern Baptist. But I want to find Republicans who would be in favor of this. So to me, it becomes a voting issue. So I guess my question would be, are there Republicans in favor of this? We're looking at local, federal, state, And we just elected someone from Jacksonville, John Rutherford. And I will tell you one thing about John Rutherford that just caught my attention immediately. And I think I'm correct on this. Correct me if I'm not. John Rutherford is a strong Christian man, but he's against the death penalty. And I'm against the death penalty. So that right there caught me in something that a Republican, John Rutherford, the sheriff's a little bit different. So my question is, from a legislative perspective, local, state, federal, how do we move in a direction where we can find these kind of men and women that would support this? Thank you.
Chuck, thank you for your question. And Rabbi, I think fundamentally what this begs us to think about is, what story will we live by? Will we be defined by our political party? Will we be defined by our place in the community? And or will our faith be the predominant identifier of how we live and move in this time? And that's on a number of levels, not just the HRO question.
Yeah, I gave a sermon a while back about being political, not being partisan. And if you look up a dictionary definition of what it is to what politics is, the definition is the art of governance, how people live with each other, how people interact with one another. And obviously, religion has a lot to say about that. You know, I was just thinking about much of the criticism that Dr. King received for his activism. And just having gotten back from Memphis and a visit to the National Civil Rights Museum, I was thinking about his letter from Birmingham jail. Religion has a role to play as a moral voice in the public sphere. It's not going to endorse particular candidates or platforms. You know, there are many, many Catholics who may be Republican, who are absolutely categorically opposed to abortion, but are also opposed to the death penalty, and from the same religious basis. I think it's a very compelling question for politicians, perhaps, to have to, they are not in their offices as religious figures, yet in some form, shape, or manner, if they are truly devout, faith is going to inform and shape their characters. For me, it's less of a problem because I view life as not a series of compartments to be kept one from the other. It's my faith informs my politics, and I just know that as a religious leader, there is a line I won't cross in terms of endorsing a party or a candidate, because I think that actually diminishes my religious voice.
Could I jump in for just a second? I'd like to comment on the caller's question about the Republican Party, because one of the things that's changed over the last 20 years, really, is the growing influence of the religious right on the Republican Party. So 20 years ago, I think you'd have found many Republicans who were supportive of LGBT inclusion in things like a human rights ordinance. I'm from Maine, and Olympia Snowe was my senator. But I think that the Republican Party has really doubled down on the opposition to those kinds of things. And actually, they've become, as Rabbi was saying as we were waiting for this segment, they've become a mechanism for organizing voters and motivating voters. So I think you find fewer of them now.
But fascinating in this conversation is the business community that is so overwhelming, it seems, in my opinion anyway, for the HRO, and understand that it's good for business, many of whom are leaders in the Republican Party. So the fascinating conversation.
And in the we talked in the first segment about the 2012 effort. We looked back at some of the major elements of that. And there was an absence of an organized voice from a lot of the business community that was recognized. And this time, over 600 local businesses have signed their support of the HRO, as well as more than 175 faith leaders. So something has shifted in 4 years as people look at this as perhaps just a matter of equal protection under the law versus a morality decision in terms of faith. So we're speaking right now with Rabbi Jonathan Lublener, Senior Rabbi of the Jacksonville Jewish Center. Reverend Susanna Raffield, ordained Baptist minister and local small business owner, and Dr. Julie Ingersoll, professor of philosophy and religious studies at UNF. And we want to add your voice to the conversation. Give us a call at 549-2937. And we're going to speak with Marshall in Orange Park. Marshall, thank you for holding. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I guess I'm the only one that represents the other side of the issue here. I do have a question, but I do have to issue a preamble first. And that is simply that, and I've done this study extensively over 30 years, the lesson of history shows that history shifts from let's put it in simple terms, from a very objective base to more subjective base. And that always leads to the dissolution of the culture. And one of the things that brings about the dissolution of that culture is the change in the value perception of faith, family, and free enterprise. And that's the traditional definition of family, one man and one woman. So from my perspective, and I think you get it wrong if you give First Baptist Downtown too much credit, what you call the faith community, there's a very sizable number that feel a traditional view of marriage and family is critical to the culture, and as civilians or citizens empowered to express themselves in the public arena, we do and we advocate to maintain the status quo. But largely, this is a white, liberal, affluent issue, provable, and you are excluding the argument of those who don't represent your view. You don't have anyone this morning who would represent this opposing view, and that's certainly your right to put on the program that way.
Well, Marshall, let me interrupt just a moment. Let me give a caveat again. We extended invitation to several individuals who publicly did not support the HRO based on their faith commitment, and they declined to be a part of our show today. So just wanted to correct
that. I'd be happy to be a part. I am fairly active in the faith community. I'm not credentialed as a theologian, but I have a pretty good background, but I can find several people who would be happy to be on this program who would represent our view. But I guess my question is, why would you not want to examine the issue from all sides and look at it from a true faith point of view? Because classical Christianity has an entirely different position than what your faith group is present this morning represents. Rutherford is opposed to the death penalty because he's a practicing Catholic. That's a very consistent position. And the Catholic Church in its magisterium is fully against a redefinition of family, which is HRO actually represents. This is really just a politically liberal, affluent, white issue, much like the issue of the runway extension at Craig Airport that Cindy Locadera knocked down.
Okay, Marshall, thank you so much, sure. And we want to answer your question, and I hope you see that we appreciate your voice at the table, and thank you for being a part of this. Susanna.
I would like to ask Marshall a question. I would like to say, if I could,
sure.
I would ask, you know, let's say we do believe that marriage is supposed to be one man and one woman, for the sake of the argument. Why does that mean that man or two women or two men shouldn't be protected under the law in Jacksonville, Florida? Why should that diminish their human rights?
Right. And so the human rights issue, and Rabbi, I'm interested in your take on that the Bible speaks in a singular voice about what is or is not a family.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In Leviticus, the prohibition against male homosexual, anal sex, that's what Leviticus prohibits. It doesn't discuss sexual orientation. It doesn't discuss the composition of family. There are those who actually will read the relationship of David and Jonathan as being, you know, more than a typical friendship. David says that Jonathan's love surpasses, that of women. You can make whatever it is that you would like, any case that you want to make. And, you know, as Professor Ingersoll said earlier, that, there, you know, the Bible also has genocide in it. what I would say is that, you know, if we go back and we sometimes act like value systems are somehow forever set in place. Miscegenation, once upon a time, there were laws in this country against it. And there were those who were religious supporters. There were, you know, in the 19th century, many voices in the church that used religious arguments to support the moral order of slavery, you know, Ham and the Curse of Ham, and other things. If you read George Fitzhugh and some of his sermons on slavery, you know, speaking as a Jew, you know, classical Christianity would also have some rather unpleasant things to say, that I, you know, I am consciously not accepting Jesus as my savior. Does that mean then that I should be discriminated against in employment or in housing? And once upon a time, the answer was yes. So the cultural markers do shift, and it's not as if we live in this timeless world in which you know, values don't change. The question is whether or not religions can evolve and accept that.
Thank you, Rabbi Lubliner. We have time for one more call, and this is from Jasmine on the South Side. Jasmine, go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I greatly appreciate it. My thing is that a law can, you know, be passed, but you can't really legislate the matters of the heart. Because if that was the case with the passing of the Civil Rights Act, then that would have eradicated racism, and we can see here in view that that's not the case, because it's contained in the human heart. With the HRO, I definitely believe that people shouldn't be discriminated against, irregardless of whatever the case may be.
Thank you,
Thank
Jasmine.
Thank you, Jasmine. Thank you.
Thank you for your voice. And with that, we're out of time. We thank you for joining us today for this edition of Faith Matters. We began with the question, should the human rights ordinance be a religious issue? And we've been reminded that it is a religious issue for many. As we move forward, knowing that people of faith will come down on both sides of the issue, the question remains, will faith bring us together, or will it be a wedge that will drive us even further apart? We're committed to bringing you diverse opinions and perspectives on matters of faith, and we'll be returning each quarter with new voices to add to these conversations.
This show's producer is Karen Fagans. If you missed any of today's program, you can find the podcast later today at wjctnews.org. I'm Kyle Reese, senior pastor of Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church and board member of One Jacks.
And I'm Nancy Brauner, executive director of One Jacks. This has been Faith Matters. Thanks for listening.